Continuing from the discussion we had yesterday about both of the sessions that I was participating in, the going from chanting to trying to chant without offense into the stage of trying to chant where there's actual taste for chanting. In each of those successive stages, the faith in the holy name and attentiveness going to the holy name, some attraction for the holy name, attraction for Krishna. Oh, I thought I would read a little bit this morning, just some inspirational points that connect with that. As one advances in devotional service and the process of devotional service, our acharyas describe that there's a liking for the process itself, for serving, and in turn some attraction for the object of service, so increasing attraction for Krishna. The idea is that that attraction for Krishna becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. Even in the midst of devotional service, we were discussing this idea that where there's nishtha or steadiness, steady faith, is even when there's tribulation, or for that matter, even when there's things are going very well and everything is successful, attention doesn't go away from Krishna. That's shelter. Namashraya. So in a section from the sixth canto of Bhagavatam, I want to read. First I'll describe a little bit. It's a scene where Vritrasura is having his encounter with Indra, because Vritrasura was created out of a yajnic fire by his father, Trashta. And the purpose of the yajna was to create a demon that would kill Indra, because Indra had killed Trashta's son, Vishwarup, mercilessly. The king of heaven killed his priest, cut off his head, because he did something he didn't like. Trashta became very angry, his father. He created it through yajna, he created a demon that was to kill Indra, but instead he pronounced one syllable wrong and he created a demon that would be killed by Indra. And that demon was Vritrasura. So Vritrasura is fighting with Indra, and he's defeating Indra. But Indra had, and one of his battles being defeated by Vritrasura, he went to Lord Vishnu, who gave him a means by which he could kill Vritrasura. So they're fighting on a battlefield, and Vritrasura catches the trident of Indra in his hand and throws it back at him. Indra's never had such an opponent on the battlefield before. He's in awe of Vritrasura. But Vritrasura then plays the role of Indra's coach. Indra, don't be weak-hearted. You're Kshatriya. And you're very powerful, Kshatriya. And not only that, you've been blessed by Lord Vishnu. He's given you the means to kill me. And if you kill me, you get your kingdom back. That's what you wanted. You got your kingdom back. So go ahead, Indra. Use that thunderbolt weapon. All you have to do is apply it to my head, and you can cut off my head, and I'm dead. And when I'm dead, I go back to the spiritual world, and you get your kingdom back. So I get what I want, you get what you want, you have the means to do it, Indra. Go, team, go, you can do it, Indra. And then he speaks about our Lord is the same Lord. He's speaking to Indra about their common master. Persons who fully surrender at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and always think of his lotus feet are accepted and recognized by the Lord as his own personal assistants or servants. The Lord never bestows upon such servants what Indra wants. The brilliant opulences of the upper, lower, middle planetary systems of this material world. When one possesses material opulence in any of these three divisions of the universe, his possessions naturally increase his enmity, anxiety, mental agitation, pride, and belligerence. Thus one goes through much endeavor to increase and maintain his possessions, and he suffers great unhappiness when he loses them. So he's nadanam, najanam, he's at that stage of having some taste. He doesn't have taste for the other things. Oh, Indra, our Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, forbids his devotees to endeavor uselessly for dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Oh, Indra, one can thus infer how kind the Lord is. Such mercy is obtainable only by unalloyed devotees, not by persons who aspire for material gains. Common message of the Bhagavatam, here spoken by Vritrasura to Indra. Anyabhilasha to Shunyam. Jnana karma dhyanavritam. So after giving nice spiritual instruction, to Indra, Vritrasura, he's fixed his mind upon the Lord, and then he just practically forgets, like Indra's on the battlefield with him, and he speaks to the Lord. He's absorbed in adversity or victory. Here's how he speaks. And this is appropriate for our meditation while undergoing our 64-round day. This is our please accept me, spoken by Vritrasura. O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, will I again be able to be a servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? O my Lord, O Lord of my life, may I again become their servant, so that my mind may always think of your transcendental attributes, my words always glorifying those attributes, my body always engaged in the loving service of your Lordship. He's like not on the battlefield anymore. He's in another place. O my Lord, source of all opportunities, I do not desire Janam, Dhanam, Sundarim. I do not desire to enjoy in Dhruvaloka. That's a spiritual planet. Yes? The heavenly planets, or the planet where Lord Brahma resides, nor do I want to be the supreme ruler of all earthly planets or the lower planetary systems. I do not desire to be the master of the powers of mystic yoga, nor do I want liberation. Sounds familiar, right? Mama Janmani Jamanishware. If I have to give up your lotus feet, O lotus-eyed Lord, he gives three metaphors. As baby birds that have not yet developed their wings always look for their mother to return and feed them, this is how we should chant today. I have a picture of this, and I was thinking to show the picture or something, but I got distracted by other things. It's a very nice picture. It's little baby birds, just like it's described. Ajata paksha, birds who haven't developed their feathers yet. So they have these little fleshy things, and they're, you know, there's like four or five of them, and their mouths are wide open. And the father bird is over there checking out the scene, making sure everything is safe, and the mother bird has a nice worm. And she's holding the worm out over there, and, you know. And their necks are stretched. They're not just like, you know, like some mothers feeding their kids. They have their, you know, they're... It's a nice picture. I wish I... Anyway. O lotus-eyed Lord, as baby birds that have not yet developed their wings, that means they're dependent. They can't go and get their own food. They're dependent. Always look for their mother to return and feed them. Second, as small calves tied with ropes await anxiously the time of milking. So we don't have much experience of that. Mother Queenie has experience of that, and devotees that have taken care of cows, little calf, anxiously awaiting mother to come back and milking time. There's a word that's used in the Sanskrit that shows how it expresses that the necks of the calves are outstretched as they're taking the milk from the mother. It's not without effort. It's with effort and eagerness. So it's activity and something of the heart with feeling. There's eagerness. Anxiously awaiting the time of milking when they will be allowed to drink the milk of their mothers, or as a morose wife whose husband is away from home always longs for him to return and satisfy her in all respects. I also yearn for the opportunity to render direct service unto you. O my Lord, my Master, I am wandering throughout this material world as a result of my fruitive activities. Therefore, I simply seek friendship in the association of your pious and enlightened devotees. My attachment to my body, wife, children, and home is continuing by the spell of your external energy, but I wish to be attached to them no longer, that my mind, my consciousness, and everything I have be attached only to you. That's taste. We're not as elevated as Ritrasura, but that's the hope. And for taste to develop, there must be hope. Hope means two things. Attaining that is real and possible. So there's faith. There's shelter. And on the other side, there's eagerness to attain. And then we step. And as we step, there's reciprocation. So, what I wanted to do, in addition to describing this eagerness to receive mercy of Krishna's holy name, like a baby bird with wings that the feathers have not developed yet, like this. Devotees, practicing devotees in this sadhana bhakti stage, who are eager for mercy. And without mercy, we'll perish. We certainly will not achieve the goal. But the eagerness for that mercy is where our energy goes today. And what is it that we wish to attain? If that what we wish to attain becomes more clear, it surely will help the eagerness to attain. And so I was hoping that there's a section in Brihat Bhagavatamrita where Sanatan Goswami is describing Vrindavan and what his, I mean, not the Vrindavan that we see with worldly eyes, but the Vrindavan that you cannot enter just by buying a ticket, that Vrindavan. And I can't find that. I spent some time to serve you all and to following an inspiration, but I it's achieving Krishna's shelter in Vrindavan is, and what that realm is like is very, very attractive. So instead, I'm going to read short section. There's two passages. One is in the part two of Brihat Bhagavatamrita. There's a Brahmana, Mathura Brahmana, who is Karmakanda Brahmana, and he's somehow it awakens in his heart that he would like to have the topmost experience of relationship with the Supreme. So, but he's not satisfied doing what he's doing, and so there's a whole unfolding of events. He goes to Prajyotishapur, where he does some Karmakanda rituals because he's told that will, you know, that will, that's it. You'll like that. things and things happen, and he somehow meets Gopakumar. And by meeting Gopakumar, Gopakumar answers his question, how to have this experience, by saying, normally this is not done, one doesn't speak about oneself, but I can't think of a better way to explain. So I'm going to describe the story of how I met Madan Gopal, and that may help you understand how you can meet the Supreme Lord. And at the very last chapter of that whole section, here's what Gopakumar says to the Mathura Brahmana. After he had achieved that stage of spiritual perfection, he met Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, and most wonderful narration by Sanatana Goswami. He said, I was in Goloka Vrindavan, and Radharani approached me and said, I have some service for you. Imagine if you were approached by Radharani saying, would you like a little service, Prabhu? Please understand, O best of Mathura Brahmanas, just like me, you have already fully achieved your goal by the mercy of the divine goddess, that's Radharani. He hasn't yet, but it's like it's done, even though it hasn't yet happened. Whatever is left for you to achieve, you've already nearly attained. Please know this. I can see that the Supreme Lord has bestowed upon you his full mercy. Just see, I have indeed told you everything that happened to me and to the Lord and to his devotees, even though these topics are most confidential. The special ecstasies one relishes in the shelter of the Personality of God, his lotus feet, are private. One should feel shy to reveal them, even to one's own mind. And sometimes I entered such special states of consciousness in which I could no longer recognize myself or others, nor distinguish one thing from the next. And so there were events I didn't see. Yet Krishna, in your presence, has entered my heart and brought all these topics out, forcing them to come from my mouth. I have noted clear signs that you have gained strong faith in these topics, a faith that will soon bestow upon you all its rewards. Early this morning, Sri Radhika Devi herself came and ordered me. Sarup, she said, a brahmana from Mathura who is my devotee is coming to my grove. Go there. He's in Goloka Vrindavan. Radha is in Goloka Vrindavan. Sarup, go there. The first thing today, enlighten him with good instructions, console him, and help him quickly attain Krishna's grace. On her instruction, I came here swiftly, overjoyed, without even a thought about missing the enjoyment of Krishna's company. So, this is then Maharaj Parikshit speaking to his mother. When Sarup saw that brahmana, who even after spoken to in this way had not awakened the treasure of pure love, Sarup put his hand on the brahmana's head. And he transformed the brahmana, and the brahmana came to this, like one of the longest purports I've ever seen. It's like 20 pages long purport. His consciousness fully awakened. The Brahmana was submerged, just like Swarup, in an ocean of tastes, of pure, exalted love. This is, you know, the other side of the gap that we're looking at. Where we are and where we want to be. His whole body, just like Swarup's, was filled with many symptoms of love. He cried out to Krishna, the foremost of youths, "Oh, Krishna! Krishna! Please show yourself!" Like Mahaprabhu. He placed a blade of grass between his teeth, bowed down, and with plaintive cries asked of Swarup and of all moving and non-moving beings, "Where is Krishna? Have you seen him here?" Loudly chanting the all-attractive names of Krishna, the Brahmana clutched Swarup's feet. The Brahmana saw that Swarup, his guru, was drowning in an ocean of love and had lost control of himself by witnessing the love in him. And so the Brahmana wept. A moment later, compelled by a great upsurge of love, the Mathura Brahmana got up and began to wander in the forest. There he fainted and fell on a thorny grove of karika trees. All of a sudden, from a distant place came rich and sweet sounds of flutes and horns mixed with mooing of cows and the sound of veenas made from gourds and whistles made from leaves. Awakened by the persistent sound, Swarup and the Brahmana ran in his direction. Then they saw Gopal Dev, his body beautifully dark, encircled by a brilliant effulgence. So here's a description of the Lord's form. The Lord unlimited in pastime, was coming nearby to water his animals and play with his friends in the Jamuna, daughter of the sun. As he approached, he danced with a gait worthy of honor from the playful walk of the king of elephants. His chief ornament was his own unique youth. He was an ocean filled with wonderful waves of beauty. Ever adorned with newer and newer charms, he redoubled the joy of everyone's minds and eyes. All auspicious signs marked his body. Garlands of nipa flowers adorned his ears. Garlands adorned his ears. And a peacock feather, his hair. A string of pearls decorated his conch-like neck. And his yellow silken garments, upper and lower, shone brilliantly. On his broad chest, home to the Srivatsa Mark and Lakshmi, hung a long garland of gunja berries. His waist was like a kingly lion's, his prowess like that of hundreds of lions. The essence of all good fortune worshipped his lotus feet. Enhancing his dress were many garlands of kadamba flowers, gunja berries, tulsi leaves, and sprouts of shikanda. Variously decolored flowers adorned his waist, and his belt hung in a way that beautified his hips. His arms, round, broad, and stout, pleasing to the eyes, shone with splendid golden armlets and bracelets. The fingers of his lotus hands happily played on his charming flute as he held it to his bimba red lips. The unprecedented embellishments of his flute song, anticipated by him alone, bewildered all the universe like an intoxicating nectar, and the restless play of his glances, sidelong and slight, gently decorated his lotus eyes. His splendid dance of his eyebrows, a pair of archer's bows, nourished his servant's loving feelings, and his beautiful, ever-smiling lotus face attracted the hearts of the best of the sages. And more. On the tip of his nose, a nose exquisite like a sesame flower, shone a single pearl born from the forehead of a lordly elephant. Now and then his hand would gracefully brush aside the bees of his locks of hair, which were adorned with dust raised by the cows. His broad forehead, shaped like a half moon, glowed with the splendor of his straight-up tilak, formed with the clay of the Jamuna. His limbs were painted with designs made from various mountain minerals. He was an ocean full of huge waves of sportive pastimes. Standing in his charming threefold bending pose, sometimes he played various entertaining melodies on his flute, making his dear friends laugh. His feet decorated the earth in all directions. Surrounding him on all sides were his dear friends, whose appearance resembled his. And he stood with his elder brother Rama, as in Balarama, whose complexion was white, and who was bedecked with blue silk garments, whose body was most attractive, and whose Asian dress were just like his own. The weight of the persistent, heavy joy of seeing Krishna made the two devotees fall. Indeed, they suddenly threw themselves to the ground, as if to offer prostrated obeisances, all their competence lost in the excitement of the moment. The Lord, compelled by his love for his dear devotees, ran towards them. And when he reached them, he fainted and fell on top of them, embracing them both with his long, mighty arms. Imagine the spiritual master, his heart melting with compassion, bathe them with a shower of tears of love. In a moment he stood up, lifting the two devotees from the ground with both hands and steadied them, wiping off the tears and dust smeared in the bodies of these devotees. The merciful Lord embraced them over and over again. And right on that spot, he sat on the ground with them and spoke nectarian words to please the Brahmana. The blessed Lord said, as the Supreme Lord said, listen to his words. Blessed and noble Mathura Brahmana, Sri Jana Sharma, you are the moon born from the ocean of the dynasty of Brahmanas. Are your peace and well-being resplendent in every way? Only by your influence are my family members and I well. This is Krishna speaking. By your mercy, my heart is attracted to you. I have always looked toward the path by which you would come. I've heard commentary on this where expanded he says, I thought, this is Bhakti Chaitanya Swami, I thought maybe this lifetime he'll come. So I waited. But you didn't come. Then maybe the next lifetime you will come. I was very patient. I was hoping you would come, but you didn't come. Surely the next lifetime you will come, I thought. I was losing patience. I was so much expecting. So many lifetimes have passed like this, but you didn't come. I have always looked toward the path by which you would come. By good fortune, now you have remembered me. By good fortune, I have seen you again after so long. Dear Brahmana, I am totally under your control. Please feel free to enjoy here as you like. Prabhupada's teaching is when we take one step towards Krishna, he takes 10 steps towards us. That is to say, his eagerness, tenfold, whatever our eagerness might be. That's Krishna. And he's eagerly waiting, looping back to our setting the mood for the Japa retreat. Krishna has sent us all an invitation. He sent a lot of people invitations. And some have said yes. But this invitation is a perpetual invitation. And the call is like the Lord is addressing the Mathura Brahmana. I was looking at the path. Because there's this other passage where Gopal Kumar, is describing his whole experience to the Mathura Brahman and says, I'll read it, it's very nice. With this emphasis, the emphasis I'd like to make is the receiving mode. There's effort that one has to make in the receiving mode. Part of it is to stop thinking of ourselves as doers and think of ourselves as receivers of mercy. Servants, according to the indication of the Lord, we're servants. But he's the master, he's the performer. We're just little specks. Like the verses, Rupa Goswami's Namastakam verses that were sung yesterday. One of them is a often repeated one, the Chakora bird. He's described the Chakora bird in the Namastakam. The Chakora bird is one who will only drink water that's falling from the sky. So if it's dry, he'll perish. But he looks to the sky. There may be water elsewhere, but it'll only take water from the sky, falling from the sky. So like the Chakora bird, Rupa Goswami says, I am simply awaiting your mercy. Like Vritrasura, simply awaiting your mercy. That mercy will come in the form of those who are your beloved mercy distributors, your pure devotees of the Lord. So, Gopal Kumar received some instructions from Narada on how to achieve Madan Gopal, the object of his mantra. Following Narada's instructions, Here in Vraja, I went to the many places of Krishna's pastimes. I sang his names, most dear to me. I sang about his pastimes loudly and sweetly. I focused my mind upon them. And I attained such a state of ecstasy and became so emotional that it embarrasses me to even think about it. How then can I describe this to anyone else? I spent my days and nights in great distress, always crying in a pitiful voice, not knowing whether the practice I had so long been following would lead me to happiness or cast me into an ocean of distress. I couldn't tell whether I was living in the flames of a forest fire or in the supreme nectar of clean, cool waters of the Sri Jamuna. In such a way I lived in this grove, this most attractive ornament of Vrindavan, and one day, while immersed in an ocean of weeping, I fell unconscious. Then the crest jewel of all who are merciful appeared before me with his lotus hand, a hand cool like nectar and always pleasing to hold his flute. Always pleased to hold his flute, he wiped the dust from my limbs. It wasn't easy, but that greatest of cheats playfully stirred me back to consciousness by filling my nostrils with his uniquely heady fragrances, which I had never known before. Then, seeing his lotus face, I quickly stood up, not knowing what I was doing. My heart filled with joy, I tried to catch hold of the splendid yellow cloth. That king of charming heroes blew his flute in his own playful way and escaped from me. Suddenly he stepped into a grove, and alas, though I ran about looking, I couldn't find him. He had disappeared. Unable to see him, I fainted and fell to the ground into the swift current of the Jamuna. Then he describes he was somehow mystically transported to Goloka Vrindavan. And when he awoke, he didn't know where he was. And he looked around in all directions, and everyone was looking morose, like half dead and silent. And he went from person to person and asked them, "Where am I? What is this place? And who is in charge here? Who is the king? Which path leads to his palace?" As if rude, no one said anything. Not a word. And he was thinking, what is this? Finally, one Brahmana responded. The Brahmana says, "This is the village of Nanda Maharaj. And his son has gone to the forest. And everyone is morose in feelings of absence of the son of Nanda Maharaj. And he became choked up and couldn't speak anymore. So he was wandering around, and he went to a gate, and he saw, this isn't precisely how it goes, but he had a gate, and he saw everyone was running for the gate. Thousands of people running for the gate. So he asked one lady, "What is everybody running for?" "Krishna is going to return. It's the afternoon. His pastimes of herding the cows is nearly completed. This morning, that giver of life to us, Vrijavasis, went to the dense forest to play, and his cows and friends and his respected elder brother, at dusk he will return. All the Vrijavasis are waiting on this path along the Jamuna, their eyes transfixed on the road. These trees stand with leaves erect, eagerly awaiting the chance to see him. Surely, he'll come along this path. As if anointed by a downpour of purest nectar, I gazed with one-pointed attention down the path the old lady had pointed out. The sheer force of my ecstasy had frozen my thighs, but with some effort I moved on, and I heard from afar a certain sound mixed with the mooing of cows. It was the supremely attractive murmur of Krishna's enchanting flute. Before he saw Krishna, he heard his flute. That sound, sweet melodies of sportingly played notes, diverse with musical embellishments, was like nothing ever heard in the material world. Its attractive force at once overwhelmed everyone in the cowherd village. By the power of that sound, sap flowed in a downpour from the long row of trees. A flood of tears fell from the eyes of every embodied being in the village of the cowherds. A shower of milk rained from the breasts of all of Krishna's mothers, even the elderly, and the rapid currents of the river Jamuna suddenly stood still. Krishna's coming. I didn't know whether that flute gave out poison or the nectar of immortality, whether its sound was harsh like thunder or soft like water, hotter than blazing fire or cooler than the moon. I couldn't tell. But that sound drove all the Vrijavasis mad. All of them were utterly bewildered. Then I saw some women of Vraja come out of their homes, bearing in their hands the things needed to greet Krishna with worship. Others who passed held ornaments and offerings of food on their heads. Other ladies, ignoring everything around them, ran toward the mingling sound of the mooing of the cows and the song of the flute. In the frenzy of love for Krishna, the ladies stumbled down the path. Some of the ladies fainted. Their faces wet with tears and saliva were carried forward by their girlfriends. Other ladies, pained by the urges of their love for Krishna, went ahead, pressed on by their friends. Come see him. The ladies, so diverse in complexion and adorned with diverse ornaments and dress, put to shame the goddess of fortune herself. The good fortune of the goddess of fortune herself. Swiftly the ladies ran to the bank of the Jamuna, absorbed in singing his names and pastimes. Now comes the description of his form. There's this eagerness first. I too went forward, as if pulled by someone. Remember that? Pushing and pulling. Joining the throng of gopis, rushing forward on all sides, I too began to run quickly. Then from a distance I saw him, his charming flute in hand. Running quickly, he emerged from among his friends and animals and approached me, saying in a sweet voice, "Look, Sridham, here is my dear friend, Sarup, the sun who shines on the lotus of your family." Who is Sridham? Radharani's elder brother. He is the sun who shines on the lotus of your family. Sridham, here he is. He's come. Krishna was dressed for the forest. His garments, earrings, and peacock feather crown all swayed to and fro. And so did his garlands of kadamba flowers. His fragrance perfumed all directions, and his beautiful lotus face bloomed with a playful smile. His lotus eyes beamed with a merciful glance, and the varied assets of beauty decorated him in a singular way. The fingers of his lotus hand busily pushed back the locks of his hair, which flew about, adorned with the dust raised by the cows. His tender, divine lotus feet touched the surface of the earth just to grant her the gift of supreme splendor. Playfully dancing as they moved, they attracted everyone's heart with their great eagerness to walk quickly with large steps. Almost done. The effulgence of his cloud-colored body, shining with the full sweetness of youth, lit up all corners of the sky. His beauty, which captured the hearts of the ever-dear devotees of Vraja, was an ocean abounding with countless excellences. He leaped forward and came close to me, compelled by the affection of his helpless devotee. I fainted in love at seeing him. He caught hold of me by the neck, and suddenly he too fell to the ground. You've come back. Fainting in ecstasy that his devotee has come back. I waited so long. I sent messengers. You said you would come. You sent your prayers to me. I agreed. And I was waiting, looking at the path, and you didn't come. Finally, you've come. So our eagerness just has to begin to approach Krishna's eagerness. And it's not, you know, that invitation is for an exclusive, select list of invitees. You know, inner club or something like that. The invitation is for all living entities to come to him. And the call is the chanting of Krishna's holy name. That's the invitation. He's giving his association. If we simply respond. So we've made a nice yes, we're here. Let us make a very strong yes and try to approach Krishna very feelingly. And if he doesn't at once appear, continue very feelingly to call upon Krishna. Like the featherless baby birds stretching their neck, or our, just like Vritrasura was describing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, same, or the Mathura Brahman. Where is Krishna? With eagerness, Mahaprabhu with his outstretched arms will put up that nice picture. Eagerly seeing Krishna on Chatak Parvat, running. Krishna! Fainting in ecstasy of the anticipation of being with Krishna once again. Although he's Krishna himself. So, I spoke much longer than I had intended to do. Was it some inspiration to help go forward with this nice exercise of chanting 64 rounds today? And if you can chant more than that, that's nice too. Shri Shri Radha Damodar ki, Shri Shri Prabhupada ki, Gaur Premanandi Nibo. Yeah.